Welcome to the Dad's Night Podcast, where ridiculous becomes reality. We're your dad hosts. I'm Chris Parrish.
And I'm Tommy Reed.
This week, we're joined by University of Michigan royalty, three-time Super Bowl champ and NFL Hall of Famer Ty Law. We'll talk about growing up in Pennsylvania, his time with the Wolverines, and winning three Super Bowls, and being a dad to five kids, including a current Wolverine. We'll also catch up on the fall activities and college football. This podcast is brought to you by the Believe Network. Fall, Tommy. I'm so hopped up right now for today's podcast. I'm going to try to not make it 7 hours long, but I could.
Let me tell you, you seem like this is like Christmas morning right
now. I'm so kidding. I had a lot of coffee today, too.
I mean, I know you're excited.
Yeah.
So before we get into the three W's, we're doing something different by Something's Brewing. So let's get into that section real quick. All right, folks, here we go. Something's Brewing, brought to you by Pomos. .com. Pomos is an incredible line of cannabis-infused beverages. They have Pomos spirits and two strengths depending on your choice of cannabis. You could pour them as a substitute for alcohol in your favorite cocktails, or try Pomos ready-to-drink cocktails like the peach and guava Bellini, which is delicious, and the tropical Mai Tai. Order Pomos to be delivered next day to your house at Pomos.com, or get it at your local dispensary. If you get it at Pomos.com, hit the promo code DADS and get 20% off
this
your next
is amazing.
Order. There you go.
Are we allowed to use this promo code?
Absolutely we are. That's our influencer right there.
We're influencers. I love it.
By the way, I had Pomos margaritas all weekend.
I heard.
Slept like a baby. No hangover. It was fantastic.
I ran into a friend of the pod, Casey Edgar, yesterday.
Yeah,
he said you did a number on him.
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, he was actually pouring his Pomos into the old fashioned.
I don't think that's how you do it. But
yeah, but he had a GT.
He's a revolutionary.
But anyway, I'm excited about that. So thank you, Pomos, for being one of our sponsors, and I'm having a cold brew right now, so cheers to Something's Brewing.
Cheers to Something's Brewing. What's up next, Tommy?
Well, look, I know you're excited, so let's get right into the three dubs. All right, so where you going, what you doing, what you excited about? Brought to you by Postal.io. Hey, Daz, what's the easiest way to delight your customers and prospects? But sending one-of-a-kind corporate gifts with Postal's offline marketing software. Postal helps companies create meaningful connections at scale while tracking it all in your CRM. Learn more and get a free trial at postal.io/dads. Chris, why are you so excited right now? What's going on?
Well, look, obviously, we're going to talk a little college football today. I'm excited about college football in general. I've watched as much as I can. Coaching two teams, blowing up my Saturdays. So Michigan was 9 a.m. Saturday. I had a game at 8 and a game at 11. So I'm fighting through that. I think our first challenge of the year, we're 4-0.
Congrats. You guys are chasing the Buckeyes,
yeah,
which I
thanks
love.
For congratulating me. I have a lot to do with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, Tua's younger brother is giving you a hard time on
he
Saturday.
He was, yeah. It was so. It was our first test. We go on the road to Iowa this week. We never have fun in Iowa. Iowa sucks, for
I mean,
sure.
It's like the worst. It's like baseball.
Are we talking
sports.
About the state?
No, just okay, their football good. Program. Yeah. I don't know how they get their 10 wins every year, but they're winning 10,
I think
3,
they do it every
5.
Other year.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, look, it's leading up to that Ohio State-Michigan rivalry, mm-hmm. and you have one of your own in today's podcast. Mm-hmm. I have to bite my tongue because you've did it for all my Buckeyes, but look, I have to take my hat off for one of the greatest I've ever seen play the game, Mr. Ty Law.
Yeah,
there it is, Mr. Ty Law.
Okay.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there, man.
Good. This is an honor. You're the second Hall of Famer we've had in this garage. Ryan Miller recently voted into the Hall of Fame in hockey.
That's right.
You're one of my favorite players of all time. I'm just going to get that out of the way. And it's interesting because I grew up as a Michigan State fan. Both my parents went to Michigan State.
Wow.
But when it was time to pick a college, obviously.
You picked the right one.
I picked the right
you
one.
You picked the right one.
And those seasons, that Rose Bowl 92, and then Bjaka Batuka going off, and then, you know, we'll talk about the game again, 28-0, sorry, Tommy, against Ohio State.
I got it.
It was a blast. And then to see you go on the NFL is just have a tremendous career. That was so much fun. I know people get Tom Brady a hard time now, but he's still one of the greatest players of all time.
He is the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, good. We got that out of the way.
And he's a Wolverine.
He is. and he owns it. And you guys own it. And it hurts, but, you know, that's the beautiful thing about the rivalry is that, like, every time still, when you see either a Wolverine or a Buckeye, and you're coming from the other, you're always going to say, go blue, and we're always going to say, go Bucks.
Yeah.
And it's like almost like a tip to the hat of respect.
I mean, we're
but it's the greatest rivalry, I think, in all of sports.
I'm
period.
Watching these two teams right now, mm-hmm. and I don't want either of them to fuck it up before November.
Right.
I
right?
completely agree.
I can honestly say if I had my dream, it would be the same thing. I don't want you guys lose. I don't want to lose as a Wolverine. I don't want the Buckeyes lose so we can meet at the end. And that's what's going to tell the tale.
Yep.
You know, who's the better team? And that will be epic if they can both go undefeated and meet at the end.
We got to
now, if something happened, now, am I going to cry or shed any tears if you lose? No.
No. Of course not.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Of course not.
But, you know, I really like to see two undefeated teams go at it. And it's funny that when I played against Ohio State in my 3 years at Michigan, I was 1-1-1. So 1-1, lost one, tied one.
Yeah.
You know what? I should have stayed in school just to break it. You know, just
we could have used you the last 20 years.
Well, I was 1-3-1. So I had your tie, I had the win, and I had too many losses. But yeah, I mean, just because I went from 92 to 97. Mm-hmm. I had to get that extra football season in, you know, and mm-hmm. for my fifth year. I just wanted to get
you're a professional.
But I mean, it was terrible because we look forward to it all season. Mm-hmm. And then when you guys just tear out our heart, it's just the worst thing you could ever do. But that's what makes it such a great, beautiful mm-hmm. rivalry, you know, is that. But I hope if we both are undefeated and we go to the end, will they ever let us both be in the college playoffs in the four-teamer right
starting
now? Well, obviously, in 2024, where we get the 12 teams in, we'll both be in. But why is it always SEC? Why can't the Big Ten get two teams in there ever?
Well, I think when you look at, you know, Power Five, you know, conferences in football, SEC is that powerhouse. You know, I mean, they've won national championship year in and year out. Somebody else might sneak in, like Ohio State, mm-hmm. and then it's right back to the SEC. That's just the way it is. And, you know, they've been dominating college football for so long. So I think they take it really into consideration, strength of schedule.
Right.
So the other teams outside of Michigan and Ohio State have to step up and make it more competitive for people to look at it
right.
as such.
And we didn't do ourselves any favors this year by playing absolutely nobody.
Right, exactly.
Up until Maryland.
Yeah, you need to blow out.
You guys at least had Notre Dame on there. You want them
exactly.
to try to keep winning. But, you know, look, I think if we're both undefeated and then there's one loss for one team, I think we have a chance. I mean, the SEC looks pretty strong right now, but then they'll all start beating up on each other.
Bama should have lost to Texas.
Bama should have lost to Texas. So but, you know, Kentucky's undefeated. Georgia's undefeated.
But it's going to take a lot more for those guys, even if they have a bad week or a bad game. They're not going to be looked at as the same as when Michigan doesn't have a great game against Maryland. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're going to get a lot. It's like, it's just a bad week. That's still Alabama.
Right.
You know, that's still Georgia. That's yep. still this. And they earned it. So, I mean, I give them, you know, much respect, and they earn the right to get that leeway. You have to earn it.
So I know that all the Buckeye Nation is going to ask, who was the toughest receiver that you ever covered at Ohio State when you were there?
I would have to say, the biggest challenge, I think, because of his skill set and, you know, his speed was Joey Galloway.
Mm.
Joey Galloway, I mean, you know, he was a Biletnikoff winner. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, hell, to be honest, Joey probably got me drafted. You know, because
I mean, Joey.
When I decided I think I owe Joey a damn Rolex or something. I always tell people that. I said, I owe Joey Galloway a Rolex or something. I just sent it to him and say thank you, because we played two games against Joey Galloway. Of course, you know, he was who he was, and I was still kind of under the radar, and I decided to leave school early. I think they went back and they seen that last game.
Yeah.
You know, I think in two games, he had three catches. I had three catches,
right.
which is interceptions. You know what I mean? So, and when he went and he ran, I think he ran like a 4.18.
Yeah, I remember that.
Some crazy shit. 4.18, 4.21. And all of a sudden, my phone started ringing off the hook. So I was projected at one time to go, when I wrote to the NFL, fourth through seventh round, because I was considered coming out. So basically that means stay your ass at school.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There.
Yeah, stay. But, you know, I was dealing with some, personal and financial hardships. So I said, I'm going to bet on myself like I always do.
Yep.
And I'm going to go for it. And I decided to leave school because I felt the responsibility to take care of my family. And when Joey did that, now it woke people up and say, well, what do you do against Michigan? Who was he covering? Oh, let me see what Ty Law is about. So every time they call, look, I can't run that shit for you. I can't do that. You know what I mean? But I said, I'm going to get you, you know, 4-3, or, you know, 4-3, 4-4 all day. You know what I mean?
So no,
I'm going to get you 4-3-8, 4-4-1, 4-4. I mean, I was legit 4-4 guy. I was never one of those, you know, legitimately, you know, 4-3. When it came to the scouts, I ran a 4-3-8. You know what I mean? Because it's time to step up. That's right. But realistically, I was probably more of a 4-4-1, 4-4-2 type of guy.
If we back up, so you grew up in Pennsylvania, right?
Mm-hmm. Big was football
there,
state.
Yes. Was there any – where did Michigan come into play? Like,
actually, coming out of college, I wanted to go to the ACC. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to do something different. Because everyone from Aliquippa, you know, like my uncle, Tony Dorsett, you know, he
one of the greatest of all time.
He goes to Pitt. Mike Dicker from my high school, he goes to Pitt.
Right.
Everyone goes to Pitt. You know, my high school DB coach went to Pitt. So my cousin Anthony, who I grew up with, we trained together, Tony's son, he went to Pitt. And he went there a year before me. So people were just assuming that I was going to go to Pitt or Penn State, because that's what most people do from Alabama. Even, the, you know, the great Darrell Revis, who's going to be up for the Hall of Fame, should get in.
Revis Island,
ballot.
Yeah, he should.
He's great.
You know, he's from Aliquippa, but he went to Pitt.
Wow.
I said I wanted to make a pivot and do something different. You know, everybody, he's the next Tony Dorsett, because I was an offensive guy as well. No, I wanted to be the first Ty Law. You can't be the next Tony Dorsett. It's only one of those.
Right.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to do something totally off script. And I was going to go to Clemson. And Ron Dickerson at the time was recruiting me. He was at Clemson. And I was going to go. Then the next thing you know, he gets the head coaching job at Temple. I was going there because of Ron Dickerson. And I said, I'm from Pennsylvania. And there's no way in hell that I'm going to Temple.
No,
you know
no,
what
no.
I mean? I wasn't going to do that. So my next choice was Georgia Tech. And I had a buddy from high school. He was down there. He was one of the starting corners down there. My aunt lived there. I used to spend some, you know, summers early on before I start spending time in Texas with my cousin and Tony in the summer. And Atlanta was it, because my aunt was there. So my grandfather come down. He just stayed with his daughter. He could see me play. They just coming off in the national championship at the time. You know, and I was like, you know.
Seems like a long time.
And I had a great visit.
Yeah.
Ooh, did I have that?
Lots
you
of reading.
About the vet? Yeah, yeah, lots of reading.
Libraries,
like
great libraries.
Hey, I ain't never heard of Magic City until I went down for that visit. You know what I mean? I'm in high school. I'm from Pennsylvania, so I had a great visit. And I was like, you know what? They laid it all out like it's a TV. I go into my locker on the big screen when I walk in on the field. I mean, they really laid it out for me. And I was like, you know what? I guess I'll become the Georgia Tech. So I actually made a verbal commitment to Georgia Tech.
Wow.
And – you know, when I went and thought about it, I was like, you know, I was making a decision, you know, for basically the wrong reasons. That's why we didn't have the financial wherewithal to even for my grandfather to get down as much as I wanted. That I thought he could, even though his daughter stayed and my aunt stayed in Atlanta. And then I had such a great visit. I might have been blinded by other things. Right. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So,
right.
So, and then so when I got back, I said, you know what? I had a couple more visits to take. It was Ohio State, Michigan. And Michigan came, and I didn't even understand the rivalry at the time.
Sure.
Guys. I did not know.
Yeah.
Let me give you a story about Michigan State first. So Michigan State came. So they sat in my living room, and me and my grandfather, they was going through the whole spiel recruiting me. And I was like, you know what? You know, I'm listening. I'm saying it sounded good. And then he messed up. And I forgot what this guy's name was. He said, look, Ty, I think you can come here and play right away here at Michigan State. I understand you're looking at Michigan, maybe taking a trip, but they got a kid by the name of Diallo Anderson. They're hiding him down there in Fork Union Academy. He was down there with Eddie George at Fork Union Military Academy down there. You know, he was the number one DB in high school coming out, you know, a year prior to me. And he was like, look, he is that good, you won't play there. I got up right away. And I told him, so my grandfather was like, I said, he can go. I ain't coming back in there. I just got up and walked away because you're going to sit there and tell me as you're recruiting me.
I can't do it.
That somebody else is better than me and they're hiding them down there. So, and I won't play. You'll play here right away. So I was like, you know what? That was off.
Good.
So come.
Michigan State making the right decision.
Yeah, Michigan State. So, you know, it was a small possibility. It could have been a spark. So now Michigan comes and I said, you know what, I'm going to go to Michigan. I took a visit there, and this was after the Michigan State. Guess who I was rooming with? Diallo Anderson.
No way.
Diallo, wow. Which is one of my best friends in the world. He actually ended up being my roommate, but I was sizing his ass up.
Oh,
funny. You know, every 2 minutes. I mean, he came in, I talked about it in my Hall of Fame speech, because like I said, it's one of my best friends in the world. And he had on his little military outfit, you know, snug, you know, camel toe. I was like, yeah, come on, man. This guy right here with the tight ass suit on.
This is the guy I can't beat out.
So we have a lot of fun with it now. But I end up going to Michigan solely based on my grandfather being able to see me play. And I know they were going to play, you know, 5-6 games on national TV.
Yeah.
So I didn't go to Michigan, you know, for the great academic institution that it was, the football program or anything like that. I went because it's not Pitt or Penn State. It's only 4 hours from home, and they're going to play on national TV. So if my grandfather can't get there, he can always see it on TV.
That's
so
great.
I based my decision on that, which ended up being, you know, the best decision that I could have ever made.
Absolutely.
Going to the University of Michigan. But I had one more trip to take. And that was saying, I said, you know what? I'm going to come to Michigan. But I had another buddy from my high school. He was a starting safety at Ohio State, Tim Patillo. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to go up there, have a good time, but I got you. They were like, no, please. They begged me not to go to Ohio State. It's just a visit.
Right.
I'm going to get my $40,
right.
You know, my little per diem, and I'm going to have a good time. And, you know, I say, they just begged me not to go. And I said, you know what, okay.
Yeah.
I won't go on that trip. I was the last signee of, you know, at the time you can do 25.
Yeah.
I was a 25th scholarship for Michigan. I was the last guy,
wow,
you know, signed,
man.
And the rest is history.
I didn't realize how close this was to being a disaster.
So. I mean, just like you are known as, like, I would say you as the next coming of Ronnie Lott, where you would hit people so hard, and you were known to not only be one of the greatest, you know, cornerbacks and defensive players ever, but you would pop people like a linebacker. Mm-hmm. You would hit as hard as a linebacker as a cornerback.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was part of my game. I come from, you know, Aliquippa, where, you know, it was very physical.
Yeah.
You know, the way we played the game, you know, you had to be tough. You know, you had to be skillful. So everything that I am started from my upbringing in Aliquippa. You know, I mean, when I got to Michigan, I mean, basically, shit, that was easy because we had such demanding coaches. And ever since I was 7 years old, I mean, you wasn't tired. You was MF, you little mother, you know, did it.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about that's how they talk. It's a little different how, you know, how we talk to the kids and all that stuff.
Now I gotta start swearing.
So even at 7-8 years old, and that's how passionate they are. And these coaches come out there serious. If you lose a game, the town hates you.
Wow.
You know what I mean? You walking around there like, man, you know, even grandma, sorry asses. You know what I mean? If you lost the game, because the whole city stops. You know, on Friday night when it's time for the quick play.
With your kids, like, you go to Sydney's games, right?
Right.
Is it hard for you to just not want to just jump in there and start giving feedback?
Man, it is so hard because I'm sitting there, I'm like, what are you doing? I always say, Sydney, be aggressive. My son, you know, mate, you got to be aggressive. It's one thing of having talent because Sydney has exceptional talent, you know, but I got to get the mental part strong.
Right. You got to want to win every
one. You got to want to win every one. She can go out there and do anything that she wants to do. You know, and I mean, she's that talented that fast. But if you don't have the mental, you know, to go with that talent, you're just another athlete, the average athlete. So I think people don't understand the mental part of the game is just important as the physical.
Right. Like in soccer, I don't care how fast you are, how hard you can kick a ball, you've got to want to go and get that ball from your team. And if you don't, then they're just going to run right by you.
Exactly.
Right? That's the biggest thing I'm trying to teach my kids now is just get in there. Like,
When you were growing up, and I know you spent time with your uncle Tony Dorsett, the Hall of Famer, down in Texas. When you were growing up and you spent summers down there, what type of work ethic did he instill in you that you would watch him to become the athlete you were?
Well, just working out with him and working out with professionals when I'm, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior. You know, I'm working out with Eugene Lockhart. I mean Emerson Walls.
Wow.
Even Tony Hill, the late, great Ron Springs, and just seeing all these – seeing all the Too Tall Jones. I'm sitting there
like
they had their little house parties, and I was more enamored by, like, the lifestyle, to be honest with you, because I went down there. I've never seen a
in the ground pool in somebody's house.
Right.
Same. Other than at the public pool, I was like, he got a public pool, swimming pool at his house. You know, I'm used to seeing if somebody had a pool in my neighborhood, it was one of those kind of big ass
which
bathtub.
I think are only like $200.
Yeah, it was a big, so yeah. I mean, that's what it was outside the public pool. So just to see, you know, the, you know, admiration and, you know, the things, you know, it was Tony Dorsett. I'm riding in cars that I only see on TV. I'm like, man, look at this Mercedes Benz. And he had, I mean, he was Tony Dorsett in Dallas.
Yeah.
So I'm living that for a couple weeks, you know, every summer. And it was just the biggest motivation because I kept, you know, it was always the next Tony Dorsett, the next Tony Dorsett. And now to go actually live it, breathe it, be around him, get to pick his brain just to see how he move, you know, how he treats people.
Yeah.
And things like that. It was an incredible experience. That was a part of my development, you know, as an athlete and as a person.
I grew up a Cowboys fan. Mm-hmm. I still technically am, although it's just
me too.
Heartbreaking. But
from Pittsburgh, I was a Cowboy fan. Yeah. Because of him.
Yeah. And so Tony was one of my like three favorite players of mm-hmm. all time. And I remember I didn't really understand football that much when I was a kid. And then they drafted Herschel Walker. And it mm-hmm. just pissed me off because I'm like, right. Well, we already have Tony Dorsett. I don't want to be else running.
And Herschel was no Tony.
No, he was no Tony. Hey, he got us three championships, though, by getting traded. I still can't stand Herschel Walker just because of that. Like, Tony Dorsett, 33, out there running. You know, I remember my mom would let me stay up late when they were on Monday Night Football because out there it was like 9 o'clock. He had mm-hmm. that run. It was a 99-yarder.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and the thing is one of, like, two or three guys in history that has won a national championship, College Hall of Fame, Heisman Trophy,
Super Bowl.
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Jeez.
Wow.
And the other one is Charles Woodson. And I think I think Marcus Allen or something like
and
that.
And you helped recruit Charles too.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yes, yeah. I recruit Charles. We was actually, if I wouldn't have left, that's when me and Charles we'd have been playing together. We'd had me on one corner and Charles on the other.
Jesus.
And
Christ.
I could imagine what we would have done together, but at the same time. And it was great because that's like still, you know, my brother now. You know, I still call him little brother because I'm the oldest. But, I mean, he had an incredible career. I was recruiting him hard, you know, because back then, you know, the coaches couldn't do it. So the players had to do it.
Right.
You know, man. So calling again, I know he was, you know, tempted to go to Florida State, you know, as well and end up coming to Michigan. So I did my job and, you know, we were so close that, you know, even throughout his days at Michigan when he decided to go to the draft, you know, he had my agent, my financial advisors, you know what I mean,
great.
Just to be able to pass down the information, and that's how it is, and we're brothers to this day.
Awesome. I went to Ohio State, actually, for the year after he left. So he's in the NFL, and then it was 98, and David Boston had, I think, quite a game because he didn't have Charles Woodson.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Well, you had an amazing Michigan career, and then the 95 draft happens. You're picked 23rd by the Patriots. The first time when you got your start as a Patriots, you happened to be against the Cleveland Browns, against the future Hall of Fame coach, Bill mm-hmm. Belichick, that would become your coach. Mm. What was that game like the first time you got to start?
I mean, it was should have happened before the third game, you know what I mean, as far as I'm concerned. But that was my dream and my goal to go in there and start, but understanding being a young guy, even though I was drafted in the first round, those veterans, you got something, you know, to somebody to learn from, you know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, once I got that opportunity, I knew as soon as they put me in, threw me into the fire, you know, I wasn't coming back off the field.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it was something that I expected. You know, I looked at it as still just football. Just that was just my mentality. I worked this hard to get to this point.
Right.
You know, so just keep doing what I'm used to doing. I was always kind of like, you know, I even got booed, you know, when I got to New England, which that's fine because I was never looked at for whatever reason as this guy. Even coming out, I was a parade All-American coming out of high school, but it was always questions about what am I going to be because I got recruited as an athlete.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like, well, am I going to play offense? Am I going to play defense? But I think people had it in their mind that, you know, okay, we're going to put him because of his athleticism, we're going to put him as a defensive back. But I did have options to say whether I want to go into play receiver. And I was a kick returner. So when I got to Michigan, it was as an athlete. So mostly if you look back at anything, it was like athlete.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, the only reason I went into the DB room at Michigan at the time because I was on the offense and I was on the defense when you got everything up body on the board.
Yeah.
And I was – they already had Amani Toomer and Mercury Hayes on the goddamn depth chart already, and they coming in with me. I was like, man. So I look on the DBs and I seen what happened to them. They played in the Rose Bowl, and them DBs got toe up,
yeah.
you know, before I got there. Right. You know what I mean? They got beat down bad. So I goes over, look at the DBs, and I'm sitting there like, damn, I'm the 10th corner on the damn depth chart. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go into this DB room because of what I seen.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then I just had on a mission that I was trying to rip everybody up in there. You know, I'm sizing up everybody, even my own classmates, because – once I realized that I wasn't worth a damn
right.
when I got there. They told me everything I wanted to hear, but once I got there, you're right. Here come Diallo. He got the guys, prior to you, the fifth-year seniors. So I had to work my way up the ladder, and I started immediately on day one. I'm trying to fight. I'm trying to do whatever I can to get on the field. I'm going at Derek Alexander, you know, which he was the number one guy, you know, and they kept pushing me back, and next thing you know, they was like, you know what, go ahead and go. Watch you get him toe up.
And that's a good, I mean, that's a good lesson, right? Because, you know, we've gone through this like in your career, like just because somebody says that you're not good enough doesn't mean that that's true. And it doesn't mean that they're making the right decision. Like the famous story is like Jordan got cut from his high school basketball team, right? And Bono, you too got rejected by the record label, right? And so that's a good driving force in your life to be like, I'm confident in myself. I'm taking a chance on myself and I'm going to prove them wrong. And that's going to drive you.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and if it doesn't work out the way you may have planned, you can look at the mirror and say, I did it my way and I tried. And I can accept that more than somebody else telling me what I can't do. And I believe what you tell me that I can't do. And then I never give it a shot. You know, now I can't look at myself in the mirror because I let you influence what I was thinking and what I wanted to do. And I'm never going to let that happen.
Right.
I love that you just constantly, you said it earlier, that you bet on yourself. Mm-hmm. That to me, I can already see that you are a super athlete that has a chip on his shoulder. Well, that's what happened with Tom Brady. And frankly, that's what happened with your whole Patriots team, I feel like. Mm-hmm. No one ever, you're in this division that was, you know, never really had basically the Jets and the Bills were kind of running it before you guys, you know, took over.
Right. In Miami.
Exactly. And then that allowed you guys to play with a chip on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I can already just see that when you put a team like that, look out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got guys that were basically, we building a brand, but, you know, as competitors and athletes, yeah, you got a bunch of guys that's pissed off because, I mean, ain't no coverage coming over here. Ain't nobody talking about the Patriots. And, you know, we played that underdog card, and we played it to the T. We use it as bulletin board material, you know, all the time, you know. And you know what, next thing you know, we just start winning. But there was still always that doubt, no matter what we did, that the it was all, you know, it was the team. It was this. Not necessarily giving the players their due respect. We're talking about we're going to Super Bowls and competing for Super Bowls year in, year out. We got two Pro Bowlers, three Pro Bowlers. Right. You do that now, anybody that's winning like we were winning, you got 8, 9, 10, 11 Pro Bowlers year in and year out. It's never been like that with New England.
Right.
Never.
So who was it? You, Seymour?
One year it was me, Seymour. One time it was Tom, Lawyer, Troy Brown, Ben Coates. You know, it was always three or four guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, Tom, myself, Seymour. It's always like it was never in those days. It was never we got the recognition that we should have. It was I played in five, but I was like, they only took three corners then. Now they're taking four or five corners. But, you know, I was always that first alternate because they didn't, for whatever reason, no matter what I did, no matter what the stats said, it was that. And that's fine. So I just always kept that chip on my shoulder. And that's when I said, you know what, I got to change something before I made my first Pro Bowl because I was playing some of my best ball but was never getting the recognition. So I said, what could I do to change? All right, I started going to train with Bob Kersey. And I think that, you know, changed my whole body. See, the way I ran, the way I played, the confidence. And I took it upon myself to find him. I had to seek him out because I seen something that he was doing on Brian Jordan.
The
baseball player that played football. He transferred. Oh, so I just seen this whole special. Then, you know, looked him up and gave him a call. He ain't know who the hell I was, but he said, if you want to come train, fine. and my career took off.
Interesting.
Big time.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tommy.
Did you guys play that first Super Bowl against the Rams in 99 mm-hmm. with a chip on your shoulder, knowing that, like, mm-hmm. we have, like, basically a backup quarterback coming in this, and we're playing against the greatest show on turf. Mm-hmm. They had the four, five, yeah. six, seven Pro Bowlers that year.
Yeah.
With and all the Hall of Famers. Bruce, Kurt Warner, Orlando Pace.
Yeah, we whooped that ass, and they got all the Hall of Famers. yeah. Come on. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I mean, I was the first out of us. Now we got Richard Seymour, and, of course, you know, Tom is going to come. But I'm talking about that era right. at that time. And I think, you know, his greatness, you know, Tom Brady's overshadowed a lot of things because he was just that good. But early in those days, it was more of a defensive you know, team. That was the strength of our team. You know, Tom Brady grew into, you know, what he is, you know, today and still going at it. And but, you know, at that time, the nucleus of our team was a defense. So yes, we took it personal because I swear when we went to New Orleans in the hotel, people just assumed that was gonna be Pittsburgh. I had Pittsburgh Steeler chocolates and shit on my bed. I don't know if that was a joke. I don't know if everybody else had it, but you know they had your Steeler colors. I mean in the lobby. Steelers stuff for sale. It wasn't about the Patriots. I'm trying to tell you, after the game, because we played in Pittsburgh for the championship game. I'm from Pittsburgh. A lot of my buddies.
Oh, there, yeah.
A lot of my buddies, you know, played for Pittsburgh. I had some buddies in there. So coming out the locker room, I'm seeing everybody carrying suitcases. I'm sitting there like, you know what I'm saying? My man Mike Logan, where the hell y'all going? Why y'all got suitcases? Man, we was leaving. You know, to go to New Orleans at the day. I said, what? Y'all were that confident that y'all was going to win, and they was going to New Orleans after the game to get down there early and all this stuff. They had bulletin board material talking about we're going to get the tickets. Bill Cowher going to go on national TV and tell them, look, we're taking out, get this ticket stuff out the way. I don't want any distractions before we even played the game. So we used all that. Oof. We used all that.
That was the year, so you actually – you guys went up against Woodson in the Tuck Rule game.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Charles still get pissed off about that. He get pissed off about that to this day, you know. And people forget that we played the Rams early in the season. And I'm like, if we ever got a chance to play them again, because we didn't play Patriot football, you know. I don't know. The coaches believe in the hype, playing the zones and all that. That is not our thing. Let's get up in their face and challenge them. And that's what we did in the Super Bowl. And they weren't used to people getting up in your face. They weren't used to people – you know, saying, okay, I can take you one-on-one. You know what I mean? Marshall hitting when he don't get the ball.
Right.
I mean, that's just the reality of what went on. You can cut it however you want it. They can say whatever they want. We were more physical. You were more talented, maybe. Maybe you were faster, the greatest show on turf. But we put that force on that ass, and it was over.
Right.
So you guys then won with a chip on your shoulder. And did you guys look at yourselves and be like, hey, we're signed on for a little bit here. We have a nice defensive nucleus here that then led to the growth of the offense, too, that Tom would start getting some weapons back.
When Tom first got in, it was our thing was young fella, just don't mess it up.
Right.
That was it. I mean, we wasn't asking him to do it because we didn't know. We just I knew he was a hell of a competitor. I knew that he wasn't backing down from anybody. But at the same time, you got Drew over here who's been the face of the franchise, one of the faces of the league, a new first guy to get a $100 million contract, all this stuff. You know what I mean? So our thing is we knew we had to step up because we didn't know what to expect out of him. Yes, he was our teammate. Yes, we were supporting him. But, young fella, we got this. You know what I mean? Because offense wins games. Everybody know defense wins championships.
Right.
And we were a defensive team, and that's how we were able to win those championships, you know, and compete for championships consistently at that time. And Tom grew into his own, and you was like, oh, this dude is a monster. You know what I mean? We went to dinner one day, and Tom was like, I ain't giving this shit back.
That's awesome.
And, I mean, he told myself and Lawyer Malloy that. And we just going on a team dinner, so, you know, we're like, hey – yeah, that's the spirit. That's what you're supposed to say. I mean, we're feeling like, okay, that's good. But then me and Lori look at each other like, not with $100 million on the table.
And Tom got hurt against Pittsburgh, right?
Yep.
And then Bledsoe had to come back in.
Yep.
Yeah, and Tom, you know, led us there. Drew Bledsoe came back out and played the game of his life as far as, you know, he had better statistical games, but the energy and the passion that Drew Bledsoe played with, he had a chip on his shoulder. Drew doing shit that he don't never do. He jumping over people, ducking his shoulder, running them over, whatever he got to do to win. And then we get to that point and go to Super Bowl. Now, you have to give Coach Belichick a lot of credit because we as a team, there wasn't any controversy with us. I want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But we did not know who was going to be the starting quarterback because Tom had got hurt. Okay, he was a little gimpy. He got us there, so he earned the right. Drew had earned it through previous years, and guess you don't never lose your job to injury, right, especially if you're the guy. So we didn't know until later on in the week until he made the decision. But as a team and the veteran leadership that you had, knowing that the nucleus was the defense,
right,
we didn't give a damn.
Right.
As long as we stop, because our job is going to be harder than y'all's anyway.
Right. You know what I mean? Right.
So we got this, you know. And when they made the call for Tom, you know, no one blinked.
Yeah.
Because you know what? He earned the right. Yes, a lot of guys felt bad for Drew because as a quarterback, this is your moment, the Super Bowl. So if anything, you know, we feel like, damn. Not in a bad way, but just feeling like, I mean, that's still our brother right there,
right,
and he missing this opportunity. And I know how he felt because, you know, later on, I understand how Drew felt because now when I'm sitting here with a broken foot on the last Super Bowl, you know, I broke my foot during the season,
yeah,
and I wasn't able to participate. So to sit there and being able to watch, knowing you can help your team, and yes, you know, we won, but I really wanted to be out there, you know, on the field.
Right.
But I already played in 3 Super Bowls and got 2 rings.
Right.
Drew at that time,
never.
We lost the first time. So he had a chance to go and redeem himself and get that coveted championship as a starting quarterback, and he never got to do that.
Yeah. It's just crazy to just hear this because, you know, we all love Tom Brady. We loved him when we went to Michigan, and he was good at Michigan, right? Like he had a platoon with Drew Henson for some reason. But, you know, that Orange Bowl that we won in overtime and stuff. And it was like, it was so cool. It was, you know, Michigan never plays in the Orange Bowl, you know, at the time. And then, so we knew he was good. And then I was super excited when he got a chance to play, but I don't think anybody could say they saw, maybe you can.
You know what? And that's what people ask, and they like, did you see this coming? And, you know, and whoever says yes, I would look at him in the face and say, you're a damn lie.
Right.
No one expected that. And that's the beauty of it because, yes, you've seen something in him, but you see things in a lot of guys. You see that passion, whatever. His work ethic was unparalleled. His competitiveness,
yeah,
you know, wanting to go out there and compete. And we used to rip him up,
right,
in practice. He going against our defense, but guess what? That's how he got better.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot of trash to him. We sit there and got up in it, but Tom is coming right back at you. He is not going back down, and he's going to go, you know, no, Lord knows you ain't supposed to come over there at me. Throw it right over there. But Tom, just to get his back, he going to come back over there and try you anyway. You know what I mean? That's what I loved about him. I mean, you're talking about a guy that quarterback is usually over here. You know, part of the team,
yeah,
but don't touch the quarterback or whatever. So in before the game, everybody's jumping around, butting heads, you know, slapping shoulder pads in. Tom is right there in the middle doing his
job.
Yeah,
he's
going to get a damn concussion before the game starts. But that's the type of guy and the type of leader teammate that Tom is, you know what I mean? So I'm like, everything that he gets now and that he's earned it, no one's given him anything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And to go down as the greatest, not only the greatest quarterback, but the greatest football player, you know, of all time, you know, it was definitely earned. And I got so much respect, you know, for Tom because he was always getting counted out, even at Michigan, for whatever reason.
Yeah,
he's not on the shoulder.
Exactly.
Chip on the shoulder.
I mean? So
do you think that you would have stayed in college for your senior year, mm-hmm, if it was today's times with all the name, image, likeness, yes, money?
I probably would have, so I can because of where I was projected to get drafted, you know, at the time, if I was already having something that I can help out, you know, back at home,
yeah,
you know, and had some income coming in, being that I was, you know, All-American and, you know, preseason up for one of the favorites for the Thorpe Award, I probably would have stayed.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But at that time, those things weren't available, and, you know, I had to make a decision. And because I was having a great time at Michigan. I was living my best life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're in college.
I'm in college.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, I felt, it was a little bit, you know, premature, you know, for me to have to leave because of where I was at, you know, and then I was still on that growth and I was going to come. I probably would have, you know, I could have possibly been, you know, being that I went still went first round, but it took a lot to go there. People had to really start evaluating me. And like I said, I'm not bullshit when I say when Joey ran that.
Yeah.
That really helped me. So now they start really looking at all my other film. And like,
sure, oh, if you can cover
dude,
him.
This dude can play. Him. Because at the time, Michigan was never known, or the Big Ten, period, was never known for corners.
No.
It's known for corners now, yeah, especially Ohio State corner.
Well, the 90s solidified it with you, Woodson.
Sean Springs.
Yeah. Well, yes.
They were both after me. Yeah.
Mike Doss, all those guys coming out of there.
Yep.
But, I mean, between our two programs, I mean, we became
because the Big Ten didn't pass the ball for 4 years.
Right, so that's why, is he going to be a safety? A lot of people thought I would go and be a safety.
Right.
I never played corner back until my senior year in high school. I was always a free safety from the time I started playing at 7 years old to my senior year. My coach decided, for whatever reason, I'm going to put you at corner. I'm sitting there like, shit, I'm a free safety. I ain't even played corner. And, you know, I just went with it. And, you know, that's when I kind of learned the bump and run. Didn't really know the technique, but I knew I was a good athlete. So I just get up and get in people's face and just mirror them, you know what I mean?
Chip
and
on the shoulder.
It was like that. But I've never played corner in my damn life.
When I hear these stories, Tommy, I'm like, can I be good at one thing? You're hearing people, I'm just going to casually become a Hall of Famer.
You're a Hall of Fame podcast.
Thank you, Tommy. I appreciate that.
Let me ask you. So you were in 95. That was Bill Parcells that drafted you.
Yes.
So you eventually worked for both Bills. Mm-hmm. What are the overlaps and what are the differences of the two Bills?
Belichick, from an X's and O's standpoint, was unmatched.
Yeah.
Period. Wow. I don't see being a lot of coaches, been with different programs. You can't beat him in that chess match. You give him the pieces, he going to beat you because that's how his mind works. I mean, he's the best X's and O's coach that I've ever seen. As far as motivating and pissing you off and getting you to play above your means or whatever, is Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
He will just sit there and jab you, get up on your gym. Now, if you can't take that type of ribbon, if you can't take that type of pressure, you're going to fold. But if you can, and he is going to motivate you that way to get the best out of you.
Give me an example, because I heard that before, that like he wants to test your tolerance to his ripping.
Well, I can use a personal experience now. Me being the first round guy and my rookie year, and you always had to get him the Gatorade. You always had to go get Coach Parcells his Gatorade. I even forget what it was. It had to be the orange or the lemon lime, whatever. But it always had to be one of those. So every break, I had to be the one to go do that. So it gets to that point where if you're messing up or you're still learning, he called me and said, you know what, Ty? You're going to be the first rounder in NFL history to get cut in training camp, you know, just to test me to see – what I'm going to do. And, of course, me being
Ty Law.
From Aliquippa. And I wasn't Ty Law. I was just Ty Law, which chip was a nobody with chip on the shoulder. I said, well, go ahead. You already gave me 1.6. Fuck you. So that's what I said. And that was just my comeback. So God's like, shut up, brother. Hell, he ain't going to talk to me like that. You know, that's just who I was. I was young, done whatever. So now let's take it fast forward to the next year. So I'm starting to gain that respect. So we're coming up to play the Dallas Cowboys. And, of course, they had Hall of Famer Mike Irvin at the time. They had Deion Sanders, Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith.
Right.
And there they are. So for whatever reason, Parcells wants to make it about Ty Law this week. You know, he ain't coached nobody but me. He was just, and it wasn't coaching. It was just sitting behind me talking to you. Oh, this one ain't scared of you. Oh, yeah, you thought you somebody. This one ain't scared of you right here. I'm like, would you please leave me alone? I was so pissed off going into that game against Michael Irvin. It was on.
Yeah.
Mike, I had so much respect for Mike. I didn't know Mike like I know him now. But at that time, as a young player, and Parcells telling me day in and day out prior to that game, and this was the one that really hit me. He said, you see what you Mike Irvin, right? Yeah, you scare everybody. You think you're tough. Not this guy. You see what he did to Arizona last week, Nez Williams? Yeah, 200 yards. I'm like, he had hit Arizona. I'm not saying it's all on Nez, but to Parcells, he's saying that Mike Irvin, it was like 211 yards. He had received 209, 211 yards prior to. And he said, and guess what? You're damn sure no Nez Williams. So imagine what he's going to do to you. Man, that pissed me off. But he did exactly what he wanted, and I ended up going out and getting like defensive player of the week. Got two interceptions and all
did
that.
He?
Boom.
I took it real personal. And that's how he got the best out of me. And Bobby Greer later on when he left told me that I was one of his favorite guys because I always bit back at him.
Nice.
See?
So the GM told me that he has so much respect for me, and then come find out he had mentioned me in his book and all that and stuff. So it was crazy. But I didn't know at the time, because I was only there with him 2 years.
Right.
And I knew he was gone when we were on the way to the Super Bowl. And this is not Coach Parcells to me at the time anyway. He came and put his arm around me walking out of the indoor facility and said, "You know what? You got everybody around here scared of you. I'm proud of you, but you better hope you never play against me." And I knew after that game he was going
to
be gone.
Oh, man.
That was just a personal moment. Yeah. You know, so, you know, I talked to Coach Parcells, you know, a few weeks ago, and, you know, he's still the same Parcells. He was advocating for me in the Hall of Fame even when I went to Kurt, because I was never going to go to Canton.
Right.
Like Hawaii. I said, I will never step in foot in Hawaii until I make a Pro Bowl. And I didn't. I said, I will never take a step in Canton, Ohio until I time, and hopefully they see me. I wasn't going, but I had to take that chip off the shoulder because my friend who I got drafted with, my brother, my roommate for the first few years at the Patriots, first 3 years, was Curtis Martin.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, so I was like, you know what? When he got in, I went.
Yeah.
But Coach Parcells was there, and he was holding court in the lobby. He seen me. He's like, come here. He's like, this guy right here, damn it, you guys put him in. And I'm sitting there to see Kurt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he said that to me. So I have, huge respect and admiration for Coach Parcells.
Yeah.
So, Ty, what's it like being a dad to 5 kids?
It's the most rewarding thing in my life, you know what I mean? I've had a lot of things that you can look at and say, oh, he's done this, he's done that, and as far as a athlete, you know what I mean? And, you know, I've been to the highest peaks, but nothing, you know, compares to being a dad, you know, to be there with your kids, knowing that your kids love you.
Right.
And being there when they come out, the woman's like, wow, that is, I mean, it's hard to describe. I mean,
right.
It's like, you know, I would trade in every Super Bowl, Hall of Fame, anything you're talking about incredible experiences. I would take those 5 experiences of being there with my kids and living a life that way than anything that I've accomplished, you know, on the football field. And it's, you know, wishing you can, you know, look back and be, you know, they're present at everything, you know, every time, and miss this, miss that, you know, being, if I get, you gotta, you know, spread thin sometime, but you know, having them together like they are and seeing how they love each other,
it's
the best feeling in the world.
Was it so your son just started at Michigan?
Yes.
So, which is great.
Yeah.
Was he always gonna go to Michigan, or did you let him come to his own?
He wanted to go to Michigan ever since he was a kid, you know, whatever. He just gravitated, you know, to it. And it's crazy how it was, because I was one of those, you know, guys for a minute, because of some other things that I was, you know, had my issues with Michigan, even though I loved Michigan.
Yeah.
But, I had, you know, some issues at one time. And, you know, all those things has been, you know, reconciled. And we talked about a lot of things, and the program has been, you know, awesome, you know, the people that's there now. But he wanted that from day one, and I never pushed him, you know, on that. He wanted to go to Michigan. He wanted to play ball at Michigan, and he's considering going on the team, walking on the team next year, because he got there academically. He got
that's
there on
great.
His own.
That's
he
great.
Had a 4.0. He got a 4.3 GPA in American Heritage down there. So I'm sitting there like, hey, make your own path.
Yeah.
But you, of course, you know what type of institution that is from an education standpoint.
Sure.
Our alumni, and just, you know, it's a Power 5 Ivy League college. I said, man,
absolutely.
you gonna be all right. You know, make your way.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, your dream ain't got to be my dream. So I've never, you know, forced him or pressured him to do and be me. because I mean it's hard to live up to, especially when you're a junior. People are going to have certain expectations. Right. But I was like, if you're going to play this sport, you come with the damn territory.
Yep.
Either you're going to raise up or you're not. You know, I ain't going to sugarcoat it.
What kind of stuff do you do differently, say like with Sydney, based on what you learned with your older kids?
I think having a little bit more patience. I'm not a patient guy, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I'm the most patient with it, because you know how you look at Sydney, you see the talent there. You sit there, it's like, you know, you can't be that patient because she has such an amazing talent, you know, and her mom being, you know, a professional athlete as well. She has a gift, and you got to bring that gift out, you know, and sometimes she's so talented to where she don't have to work as hard to get the results of somebody that does work hard. So I just try to, you know, me and her mom was like, what, we got to get you to understand that not just winning, but dominating, you know what I mean? And right now she doesn't care about dominating. If she wants to win, cause she's competitive, but then she goes into that funk sometime. You know, I mean, I come from and this is different upbringings. I come from a place where if you don't sit there and choke them while they're down, you know, they're going to get up. So we can't let them get up. Right. You know what I mean? We got to put the foot on the throat. Yep. That's where I grew up. She doesn't grow up like that. And we want our kids to grow up different. We want our kids to grow up better than what we had. Right. You know what I mean? So I got to take that in consideration, even though my mindset for everything that I've accomplished, I've always had to go above beyond, be extra competitive, be, you know, you know.
I mean, were you ever driven as a youngster? Were you like in your head, I got to get out of this town, or was
yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, I love my hometown of Aliquippa. I mean, everything I am is about that. If you listen to my Hall of Fame speech, it's like, it's Aliquippa. I will never forget that.
Yeah.
And even my 15 years, you know, in NFL, because that's the root of who I am. When they come on Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, whenever it is, we got to say our name. And I never said Michigan. Not because I didn't love Michigan, but who I am, I had to pay homage to my hometown. Ah. So when I had to come on, I say Ty Law, Aliquippa.
Yeah.
Never once said Michigan, you know, and there's no disrespect to Michigan. It was just that
that's where you're from, that's what set the tone, set the foundation,
understanding that people is going to make them feel good at home because someone is representing, you know, our hometown that seemed to get forgot about, because the only time you hear about Aliquippa outside of athletics, and we have people that have done very, very well, but you hear about the violence and you hear about what we do as athletes. And so, and it's a lot of people going through hardships there. So to represent Aliquippa, you know, I'm going to always pay respect to that first and foremost, even before a Patriot, even before Hall of Fame, even before anything that I do, I'm gonna always say this is where I'm from.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, no matter what happens, that's always gonna be home, and I always got a place to go back to, and that's Aliquippa.
Yep.
I love it. How has being a dad changed you as a person?
You can't be selfish anymore, because you know, everyone has that self shot. But I felt that I had to be selfish for a long time in order to provide the way I needed to for my family and not and live my dream and get to where I wanted to get as an athlete. You always sacrifice something, you know what I mean? And what is that? Anybody that made it to the highest level or had a career, because when you make it to the NFL, that's not a career.
Right.
You know, if you're in there for 1 or 2 years, a cup of coffee, that's not a career. I wanted my career to be in there. I wanted to maximize everything. At the end of the day, yes, I wanted the accolades. Yes, damn it, I wanted the contract. You know what I mean? Yes, I wanted to go to the Hall of Fame. So there's a certain amount of commitment that you have to be able to accomplish those things.
Mm-hmm.
Something, somewhere, whatever that is going to take, you know, a back seat.
Right.
But by having kids, you realize that, okay, this is not about you. Because when I first got out, I didn't have my first child. I was 27. So selfishly, I was doing what I had to do. But, you know, the day that my first daughter was born, it was like I'm responsible for someone else other than myself.
Yeah.
You know, even family that you've taken care of. Now, you know what? I got kids now. You know, used to get called from friends, family, whatever. Hey, could you help me out on Christmas? Isn't that game? I got my own goddamn kids. That was also great, too. You could say that, hey, man, I got kids, too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, you know, people, because you tend to give and all that stuff. Yep. And it's like you felt blessed. You felt, you know, you can, you know, bless others. And I had to learn to say no.
Yeah.
People mm-hmm. come to you and realize that my shit getting short now.
Yeah.
Because, hey, I'm right. giving mine to everybody else. But when I had, you know, my daughter realizing, like, yeah, I got to for her future. You know what I mean? The other kids, it's their future. So guess what? No.
Yeah.
You know, you made your decisions. I got to make mine, you know, and it's like, you know what? Everything focuses, you know, to them. Even now, you know, what I do business-wise, it's like, I had my fun. I'm doing this. I got to build this legacy for them
right.
and their kids. And I want to build generational wealth and, you know, and leave a legacy and yet be there, you know, for my babies.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the love that they show me and show back is it makes you want to get up and work and go every day.
And just by doing that, you're instilling those values mm-hmm. of family to your children.
Right.
And they're seeing what the sacrifices you're making for them. They're going to learn that and provide it to their
you,
legacy.
You know what? And I think they will. And this, a great example is my oldest daughter. She understands certain things, you know, now. But, you know, as kids, when you can't be, you know, when you're not there at every single, you know, thing, event, you get, okay, you might have, like, to play a game. It's like, you know how many, like, weekend I miss birthdays,
right?
Yeah,
because I got to go play a game.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was tough. So sometimes, you know, as a parent, and you feel like this, you understand it. Adults understand it, but sometimes the kids don't understand it. Why wasn't you here? Well, didn't you see Daddy on TV? You know what right. I mean? Yeah, but why wouldn't you here? You know
right,
what I mean?
You're just
so you're just dad, and I yeah. love that. You know what I mean? And
it's you
so
know on a much
you
lower
sacrifice something
on a much lower level. I just even this weekend, you know. My life used to revolve around college football, mm-hmm. Michigan always, and then watch all these other games. And then I haven't even watched Michigan yet this weekend because I was coaching two games and then I was reffing, but the kids are happy that you're there, right? Mm-hmm. And Tommy and I are trying to schedule an event for the podcast next weekend, but mm-hmm. we've got 50 games we got to play around, right? And that's what's important.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love ending the pod with this last question every time, and it's how do you want to be remembered as a dad?
I want to be remembered as someone who, as a father who loved their kids, who always wanted them to be together, and who worked in everything that I did in my life, and the success that I have had is for us, not for me.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And that's all I want is my kids to stay together, love each other, and protect each other. So if I do my job and, you know, no matter what you feel about me or anybody else, it's important for me to have them together, you know, as siblings and saying we got your back, you know, and being there for each other.
I
think that's the best job that I can do as a father, and knowing that they can talk to me and I'll be there at the drop of a dime. And, you know, and hey, if something happened to my son, you know, or daughter, call me right now. And I got to go. You know what I mean? Plain and simple. I don't care what I'm doing, period. You know, and I'm not playing football, you know, anymore. You know, and if it was an emergency, let me make something else clear. If it was an emergency and I had to be somewhere and it was between, you know, my child, which I couldn't say this before, and I think this is a great example of what I say, how I am. If my child needed me and I had a football game to play, guess what? I guess I ain't playing that football game.
Yeah.
I guess this week's check ain't coming to me.
Yeah.
I got to go.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Before, you know, not having kids is like there's nothing that, you know, because it's different from like a birthday or something like that. That's different. But if it was something that my kid really needed me to be there, I'm not playing.
It's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer for me. It wouldn't be a thought. It's a thought for some people. Well, I got to go do that. Well, I'm playing that. No.
I know that you are a businessman, and I know that you got a lot of good things coming up. Tell us about what Ty Law has coming up in his new endeavors.
Well, right now I'm in the spirits industry.
We like that.
And I like it because, you know, I get to deal with people and be myself. And, you know, when you're marketing and just, you know, sharing a drink, you know, you get a lot done and you get to know, you know, people,
right.
you know, that way. And it's been
we like to drink.
Yeah,
we do.
It's been an incredible
we're
journey.
Known for
I,
it.
Yeah, I know. I joined, you know, a company, you know, which had a, you know, a great vodka, and then I fell in love with the, you know, fun part of the business. But then, you know, as we move forward, and you know, we had some philosophical differences. And you know what? I said, you know, just wasn't a good partnership. You know what I mean? Nothing to get, I mean, great vodka, but overall, when you're talking about, you know, C-suite and ownership, and, you know, if we're going to be, you know, partners, just like in the podcast, if you guys can't figure out what the difference is, it's probably best to, you know,
part
go separate ways. You know what I mean? No hard feelings or nothing like that.
Wait, what did Tommy tell you?
Huh? So, you know, I decided to stay, and I said, you know what? I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
And I've learned so much through these past 2 years, even, you know, and I'm not taking it as a loss or anything. I try to see what I can gain out of it. And now, within the next few months, it's Corvus Vodka, Latin word
Corvus.
For Black Raven, you know what I mean? Nice. The Corvi. So,
is it K or C?
C.
C-O-R-V-I-S?
V-U-S.
V-U-S.
Yes, you know, Latin word for the Black Raven, you know, crows. And I mean, it's so cool. And I'm like, you know what? I go in next week to get the flavor profile, but what we're doing, because the only holdup has been the bottle. It's a supply chain thing going
crazy
across the board. Even if you try to build a house, you might be waiting for windows. You know what I mean?
Right,
because
right.
of the supply chain
right.
with glass and things like that. And the same thing, you know, in alcohol industry and being them small guy, you know, of course the big boys, they're having the issue, so, and they can write the bigger check.
Right.
So, you know, I had to sit in line and wait. But that's the only reason that I'm, you know, being held up a little bit. But we're in the next 4 to 5 months, we, you know, are gonna be the official, you know, Vodka, the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
And, oh, man,
Corvus,
that's going to be amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's
going to be fun.
Is it
American vodka? Or
yes, American vodka.
Where's it distilled out of?
Right out of Kentucky. We're doing a small,
ooh.
You know, after it's a little bourbon distillery, a little small batch out of Kentucky. And, you know, all my accounts, they're ready to roll with me. So it's
that's
basically,
awesome.
You know, we're going to be plugging and playing, doing a lot of
I mean,
of
we'll be plugging it on the podcast.
Oh, for sure.
Appreciate it. Yeah. I'm going to bring y'all some. Every time you get a guest, we're going to have the vodka right here. We're going to
this is recorded
every
now.
Every
this
time
is...
you go like this, I mean, take a shot.
This is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
There it is.
Exactly. So, but we're going to be two bottles simultaneously just to get to market. So I'm going to use a stock bottle for the, it's like in 4 months. And then the custom bottle, because it's a different process, is going to be our own mold, and it's a beautiful bottle. I'm going to show you guys why we're on here, but
yeah,
I like
we got
do you have an Instagram for Corvus?
Oh, not yet. We're, as we get closer,
we'll be
to,
drink
to
Corvus,
it,
like because that's usually what they all do is drink Corvus.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have some fun with it because I think, you know, just being out there, and we're you know, because I do a lot of bartending, celebrity bartending.
I love
so
it.
Say,
are you kidding me?
So to promote my part, I don't get 50 million followers and stuff like that. So I got to be up close and personal with people, but that's what makes it fun. I'm like, you know what? You know, every weekend I was somewhere doing a Michigan game or a Patriot game. I'm behind the bar. Of course, I'm pouring my stuff.
Right.
I'm not pouring nobody else's.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
You know, this is all about, you know, building, you know, my brand and sharing what I've been doing. And it's going to be fun. So I'm doing a cucumber, which was one of my favorite vodkas.
Oh,
regular. And I'm doing a berry. You know, some type of berry or tropical. So
I love
you
the
know,
cucumber vodka. That's
so good.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, you've been now to a tequila launch.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do a vodka launch. Got to
do a vodka.
And
oh,
like,
we're
happy to do a Dad's Night podcast presenting Corvus, and we could pack that real quick. I can do it at Bar 533.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
Oh,
look at
I love
that
it.
I'm gonna send this to you guys, but that's just the stock bottle. I'm gonna show you this custom bottle here in a minute, but everything.
Ooh, I like that.
We got the Michigan alumni because they've been helping out a lot. I do Zooms on Michigan.
Really?
You got to come on.
I will absolutely.
So we do
come
a Zoom.
On. Are you kidding me?
We do Zoom tastings. You know.
Oh yeah.
Work with the Michigan alumni and fam. Being on Zoom sometime, especially during the pandemic, you had to get creative.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was some of the best times.
And why agree?
They'll get it and have the drinks. We ship it to them, and we just shoot the shit and talk like we're talking right
that's
now.
I mean, when you can capture attention through Zoom, you can do it anywhere.
You know,
right?
That's a really good idea. We could actually do a Dad's Night podcast Zoom where it's sponsored by Corvus and then have like our FOPs
all across the country.
First 20 come in and then we send
them
bottles.
Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing.
So that's sharp.
So this is going to be.
Oh, I love that. That's the grapefruit?
Custom, but it's the real bottle. So,
oh,
so
wow, that's sharp.
Beautiful bottle, man.
Man, it is classy
gorgeous.
Looking.
Just to describe
like
to
Mr.
our dealer,
Ty Law. So. And we can't wait to taste this. You
yeah.
know, that's the beautiful thing is that, you know, you're keeping your entrepreneurial spirit going. You're obviously using that Michigan education to keep on into business. So God bless you. I think
you.
It's fantastic that you're, you know, providing a legacy and you're providing, well, other dads the opportunity to enjoy their spirits now.
Exactly.
This is fantastic.
It makes us better dads.
Yeah, yeah.
We're this is actually loose. The best Michigan interview we've had.
Thank you. We need something and to have dads go home because we deal with a lot. Now, first of all, I want to, you know, thank you and congratulate you guys for going out there and just putting in the time. Like, say, you missing stuff that dads like, that we like to do, like Sundays. And I don't know why, because, you know, my youngest son, they play on Sundays.
Right.
Like flag.
Yep.
Yep.
That's bullshit. This is NFL. You don't play. You leave NFL, you leave Sundays for NFL. But for you guys to go do what you do and help these kids and these girls, I want to commend you. You know
oh,
what I mean?
Thank
because
you.
Just to put in that type of time, you know, and, you know, time is valuable. But being there for your kids, it's not just being there for your kids. You're there for everyone else's kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to say thank you. And
thank you.
That is awesome what you guys are doing, because I think, you know, people don't realize when – you're volunteering.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not getting paid for this. Even the coaches that we grew up with, even though at times they're not coaching the right thing, especially in football, you have to be careful because some of these coaches, they really don't know what the hell they're doing as far as tackling and stuff like that.
Yep.
But
that's a dangerous
you
sport.
It's a dangerous sport, but you have to commend them for going out there on their time, not getting paid, trying to show these kids the right way. And that's where the little contradiction is at. So I always say, you know, those that are going out there coaching these kids, and sometime, let's be honest, you'd rather watch paint dry.
Yeah.
as far as the winning and losing, little stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
100%.
You're there with the kids, and as a competitor, as men, we want to see, like, you know, the real deal, but you're there for a bigger purpose. So I just want to, you know, thank you guys and recognize that.
Before we end the pod, there's one more thing that we have to talk about, because the entrepreneur of Ty Law, I know you started a company and then sold it. So this is like your next venture is the vodka.
Yes.
Tell us about what trampoline.
Well, I got into the trampoline park business, and I think, you know, we get kids, we know, you probably know the company Sky Zone.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest the time when I started, the biggest company out there. So I was looking for something to do after football, and I knew after being fired three times and cut, I said, you know what, I'm gonna do my own thing. You know, man, I wanna start my own business. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, do my own thing, but I was unsure about exactly what I wanted to do. I went down the line with Popeyes. About be a franchisee.
Yeah.
I did Wingstop. You know, I was just looking at things, because most of us as athletes, because we have, you know, cash to get in, we can jump into something like that. It's already a proven system. That's what a franchise is. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You can come in and create a revenue stream and build something from a franchisee standpoint. I was going to the business programs that the NFL provided. So, you know, I took the opportunity to go to the Harvard Business Program, going to stay back in the dorms and, you know, going to class for the executive program, things like that. So it was something that I always wanted to do. And the trampoline park opportunity came up. It was a guy that was building my deck. I was doing a deck at my house, and we was just chopping it up. We became fast friends, and I told him what I was doing, was looking into, and it was an extensive job. So he left. Took his family to Florida, came back, and he was like, hey, I know you're talking about doing this other thing, but if you ever do trampoline park, man, he said, I'm in. I mean, just as casual joke conversation, whatever, you know, I'm like, trampoline park, what the hell is that? And then now my son at the time, he was like, I think like 12. He said, trampoline park? Now, mind you, it's a trampoline that it was in the backyard.
Right.
You know what I mean? And my son was just being nosy. And he wanted to go to one. So I said, okay. You know, I wasn't thinking of it, of a business or anything like that. So I ended up taking my son a few days later and my daughter, and my oldest daughter. And we went in Phoenix, my middle girl. And she didn't have a good time, my youngest one, because she couldn't jump with them. But as we were going, I called and I said, what's going on? Could I come in? Whatever. They said, hey, come. There's nobody here. I got up there 45 minutes later. I had to wait 2 hours.
Yep.
So we took the time slot. So we went to the mall, came back, and we got our time slot. And I was kind of disgusted. I mean, I was like, ugh, that man smelled like feet. I'm like, ugh. I'm like, this is terrible. You know, but the older two had a good time. Younger one didn't. So now when I was leaving, it was just busloads of kids coming. I was like, shit. So I just sat there in the parking lot And I just started counting. I was like, $12, $12, $12, $12. I was like, oh my goodness, what is this? So now, didn't know anything about the industry, went home, got on the Google, say trampoline park. So I went to Florida, Texas, New York, and I went to different companies just to see, as nobody knew what I was doing. I was like, I'm going here. I ain't really telling nobody what's going on. I'm just trying to see what's going on. So I'm going in. Hopefully anybody think I was no crazy, no pervert or nothing. You know what I mean? I'm just going into a place just to see, just to observe. And I came back. It was like a month and a half later, I called Rob. Now, the job was done. He hasn't heard from me. I said, hey, you still interested in that trampoline? But he's like, really? You're going to do it? I said, I'm thinking about it, man. Yeah. He was like, I'm in. How much money can you come up with? I got about 100 videos, you know. And the thing cost about seven, because no one's gonna give you a loan.
Right.
So I took my own cash, you know, and we paid $800,000 and started from scratch. Didn't know nothing about the business because I was gonna be a franchisee. So let me say that too. And this is what people, you know, when you have a chip on your shoulder, even in business, I was about to be a franchisee of another company. And I figured, like in New England, I would have that region and I can get all these stores, but they already had the model. So we just basically do what we had to do, plug and play. But by the time we were going down to sign the contracts, all of a sudden the price went up like $400,000. I'm like, one of his employees say, hey, he Googled you. Because I never go in as Ty. If you don't notice me, I'm not going in as Ty Law. I'm going as Tawan. I'm going as Tawan Law. You know what I mean? And that's what it was. And so we backed up. Had to tear up everything that we was doing, and it set us back like 6 months. But I said, we're going to create our own, because I was realizing up in New England, your brand wasn't there. I'm the draw.
Absolutely. Right?
So you know what? I'm going to do this myself, not knowing about it. So we found a manufacturer. We came up with what we thought would be the best thing to make everything inclusive, to do a little something different, to keep it clean. And we went from one store. By the time I sold, we had 36 open locations.
Jesus. Whoa.
Over $70 million a year in revenue. And guess what? 30 days. I'm talking about 30 days before COVID. That's when I sold it.
Oh, wow.
God. I was already, you know, in the process, but we called it launch. You know, it was launch trampoline park.
Yep.
And, you know, I started one store. We didn't know what we was doing, and we grown and have, you know, 1,000 employees.
That's amazing.
Whatever. Then we went on to manufacturing and start manufacturing our own instead of, you know, going to the people that's doing everybody else's, because we were a small company. What if this guy already had 20 parts? He's going to get priority. So we start seeing it's like, oh, it's a revenue stream in here too. So, you know, we made sure, hire the engineer, reverse engineer, make sure we have all ours and say, okay, I'm not impeding on anybody else's, you know, patent or, you know, the way they do their system. And we brought everything in-house. So now, you know, from a franchisor standpoint, I start franchising them out. So now this is my model.
This is how
we do it. So I was sitting on the other side of not being a franchisee. I'm the franchisor. So we sold. I had 77 sold, but we had 36 open.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And actually, we bought a company. It was Airtime in Ann Arbor.
Oh, nice.
So before it was launched, which you see launched now, you know, off of, right across from Briarwood Wall.
Yeah.
You know, I bought Michigan. Mall. I bought the Airtimes there. So just to, you know, vertically integrate and expand. So we bought a smaller companies and then converting them to launch.
That's awesome.
You know,
that's
so
awesome.
We have a launch up there in Ann Arbor as well. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm not there. I still support the company.
Right, of course. But that's still your business model and your baby.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
Claim to fame.
Yeah, exactly. So now,
that's awesome.
You know, nothing will ever give you that, you know, nostalgia or that rise like you get out playing and going out in front of, you know, millions of people and hundreds of thousands of people playing sports. But you can still find some satisfaction in being successful and being competitive off the field. And I was fortunate enough. I thought I was going to make a lot more money than what it did now because it was hot. But then you realize, you know, things change, and you say, you know what, sometimes it's better to, know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Well,
sometimes it's better to be lucky than smart, because no one knew anything about COVID.
Exactly. You nailed it. Yeah, and I was just going to say, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered.
Exactly. Because 30 days
you
days
you could have got more money, but you know what? You got out.
30 days later, the deal wouldn't have went through, because guess what? If I was on the other end, I wouldn't have did it.
Oh, for sure. Friends of the Pod shout outs brought to you by South Bay's luxury realtor, Brooke Billings. Looking for a home to buy or sell in Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach, or anywhere in the South Bay? Look no further, as the one who gets the best results and the most market value for your home is none other than Super Dad himself, Brooke Billings, servicing his hometown Manhattan Beach and more for years.
Well, I have some shout-outs. We have our listener, Will Fletcher.
Oh, nice.
Who was one of the original owners of the Shore back in Hermosa back in the day.
Oh.
Loves the pod.
He sends out,
yeah, he's like, dude, Dan Weinstein at pod, fantastic. All the influencer stuff, fantastic. So big shout out to Will Fletcher in Texas. Big out, you know, just we're growing our reach here. I love
it. Get some Whataburger. We should get Whataburger as a
sponsor. You know, I mean, just thank you, Will, for listening, and thanks for
big three,
you know, sharing with your friends and everything. Who else you got?
Well, I got Steve Baker.
Big time.
Oh, okay. Go Blue Steve.
Go Blue Steve for setting this up. I got a text that Steve was outside but didn't want to open the garage. So I appreciate Steve for not doing that. And a big shout out to Rob Carter, who heads up a company called VelaFix, which will come to your house and set up your bike and tune up your bike and all this stuff. And
that's huge.
He gave me I got a flat tire. He gave me a discount yesterday, but I was working with him a little bit on getting more of the word out.
Well, I'd love to promote all of our social handles here. So, Chris, what are our social handles for Dad's Night?
Dad's Night Podcast on Instagram. You can email us, dadsnightpodcast@gmail.com.
What do we got, Ty? How can we follow you on social media?
I mean, you got to go to @officialTyLaw, because somebody out there took Ty Law, and I ain't about to buy my own name back. So
I'm
go to official Ty Law, has the blue check mark, and that's me, official Ty Law at Instagram.
That's on Twitter and Instagram?
Yep.
Perfect. Yep. And sooner or later, it will be Drink Corvus with the blue check mark?
Yes, absolutely. You're going to drink Corvus vodka, and I'm telling you, everybody, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be smooth. We're going to have the best flavors, not a lot, but we're going to have the best flavors, and you know, it's going to represent everything that, you know, I'm about. It's going to be the high end at a great price point, and I can't wait for you guys to taste it.
I can't wait to taste it either.
I mean, I'm already thirsty.
Right now. I think we got to go on this tasting trip.
I know. We need to promote it.
Yeah.
Ty, it's been awesome having you in here. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
Chris, I know that this is like one of your best
days
ever.
I have just a couple more 7,000 questions.
No, go ahead, man. I'm here, man.
No, it's good.
Okay,
it's
good, man.
Thank you so much for your time, and this has been awesome.
Appreciate it. And guys, this is a monumental moment, because I'm sitting here and I'm about to have a drink with a Buckeye. So we can still be friends.
Go.
But at the last game of the season, damn it, we ain't friends. But we cool right now.
We need to watch it together, I feel right. like. That's awesome. Well, everyone, thanks for taking time to listen to your Dad's Night podcast brought to you by the Believe Network. Please like it with a share with a friend or two. Because after all, this is where ridiculous becomes
reality. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
All right.